Welcome along to another episode of the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. My name is Patrick Kennelly and I am joined by Rory DeLargy, a now regular columnist and pundit, an expert, and back from the wilderness is a certain Matthew Chapman. Ruby Walsh has been very busy. We've given him a couple of weeks off. So Matt Chapman, you're back in. I think, Matt, we might have got you back in a week late looking at your blog from last week.
Well, 2 or 3 weeks late, probably, Patrick, judged by the last couple of weeks. Yeah, look, every dog, as they say, and the last couple of weeks have been fantastic. And it's been truly a pleasure to get the messages on social media from the people. It's the people who have small stakes that win what is a considerable amount for them. So the people who have £3 or £4 and put accumulators up and ended up with 180, 190 quid, that it just gives me such a kick. So, and it genuinely gives me a kick. So, but as we know in this game, you are only as good as your last winner. And the last winner, unfortunately, was a week ago.
Yeah. So 5 winners in 2 seconds from 7 selections last Saturday. That's top tipping. You can't knock that. So well done to those who did have those few quiddy trade. Rory, this is actually the longest I haven't seen you now. You must have been sick of me after Chester and York. We saw each other every day. Are you okay? The withdrawal symptoms all right, are they?
I'm just about okay, yeah.
So you weren't texting me or anything. I was getting very worried, but okay, you're here.
Next time I will, don't worry. Now that I know that you're after that.
Oh, my DMs are open. Slide on in, Rory. Slide on into the DMs.
I'm slightly concerned that we're upping the intelligence factor on the old pod with Rory now involved. It's a problem for me, but it's obviously even a bigger problem for Paddy and one or two others as well.
Well, that's the great thing is we're going to have Paddy. He's going to join us later. So listeners can then themselves, they can listen and see if the pod has gone up or down since he joins. Rory said, Rory brings a different angle, an analytical angle, I think it's fair to say. And I like it. I think it's a good mix to have, you know? Mm. You're suggesting Paddy's stuff is I don't know, a bit banaler or just less thought well out. Is that it?
You know, I'm here. I can hear you. And I just like to say I consider myself a good foil to all types of intelligence. So it's fine. Don't worry about it. I've worked with Rory before and he does make me slightly conscious of the fact that I will talk for a slightly less amount of time about the individual selections. Not because I've done less homework, just I think I'm better at just making my answers concise and more to the point.
I'm not sure concise is the exact word. Basic would be the word I think most of us would look for.
It's come back in.
Keep it simple.
Swinging. It's come back in swinging already. To be fair, Paddy, one of your most used phrases is blah, blah, blah wins.
Yeah. Well, and let's be honest. The criticism is harsh. I'm not going to say fair. It'll be fair if I don't tip a winner. If I tip 6 winners, it'll be unfair. So there you go.
Oh, I look forward to your selections.
I have a feeling the most used phrase on this podcast for Paddy might be jiggery pokery. But anyway, we'll see.
It could be. That was used before we went on air. It's a great phrase. We have a lot to get through, lads. And I'm going to bring Paddy back in later. We're going to look ahead to the Kerr on Saturday and Sunday with Paddy and Rory in particular. Matt, we're going to start with you and Rory, and we're going to look at all the ITV action on Saturday. Before we get stuck into it, just a reminder, well, maybe not a reminder, a well done to Alex Bellew, who picked up a 50 quid free bet by simply doing the most simple thing in the world. He found a tweet that was involving this particular podcast. He quote tweeted it. He said something nice. I don't know what it was, but I'm sure it was lovely. He hashtagged FTHM and he won himself a 50 quid free bet. And once again, we're going to do the exact same. So all you have to do is, again, find a tweet concerning this particular podcast, retweet it, put the FTHM hashtag and say something nice. And you're in the hash to win a 50 quid free bet. And it's not a huge amount of tweets. You've got a good chance. So why not do it? It'll take you 10 seconds and you'll be in the draw. Okay, now we've got ITV at Goodwood, at Haydock, and also a couple of races at York. We've got the Irish 2000 Guineas and the 1000 Guineas on Saturday and Sunday as well, live on RT television, as well as I think the 2000 Guineas is on ITV as well. So let's start at Goodwood and we'll work our way to the Curragh. We'll start with the 145, lads. Matt and Rory are going to kick off with some of the Goodwood action. It's our money back race online, this one, money back second, third, fourth. It's a 7 furlong handicap and it's 4 is the field at the time recording. Evocative Spark, Alo Taibi, and Gisburn is 5-1, 13-2, Bosch, and War in Heaven, and 7-1 Bar. Okay, Matt, your return is imminent. Give us a winner.
It's not going to be the most sparkling return either. But looking through these, I thought a lot of them were debatable at the trip, i.e. quite a lot of these mixed 6 and 7 furlongs. The one horse that I thought was absolutely the strongest there in the race was Evocative Spark. who's been running over the Testing Beverly track over an extended seven and a half. And for that reason, pretty much alone, there are a lot of open races on Saturday. You're trying to find an edge. I'd be very surprised if anyone would be saying this is a good thing or that is a good thing in these kind of handicaps. But on the stamina angle, which was my angle in, I was with Evocative Spark, and there did look to be quite a few front runners in here, which for a horse who is going to stay strongly might be useful. The added factor is that with that stamina, I think he'll be just dropped in behind the pace. And because he has an outside draw, that's not ideal, but it's not too bad for a horse who's going to be dropped in. So Evocative Spark, it's going to be one of the market leaders for Buffy and Callum Shepherd.
Buffy Bowie, George Bowie, the 1,000 guineas winning trainer. All right, Rory.
Yeah, tough race to start with. I'm not a massive fan of three-year-old handicaps before sort of middle to late June when the form settles down. You're judging these horses a lot by two-year-old form. But I like River Pride here. She's run two big races this season. She won a weak enough handicap at Salisbury on her reappearance, but I like the way she did it. She jumped out, she made all, she ran straight as a gun barrel. She looked very professional. And then she dropped back to 6 furlongs at Newmarket last time in a race we spoke about on the podcast. And I thought she ran really well to split Harry Three, who was Ruby's selection, and my selection, the coal horse, Ernie's Valentine. She was going on very nicely at the finish, as you'd expect, for a filly who'd won over 7 furlongs on her previous start. She's drawn in the middle here, which should be fine. Ideally, you want to be drawn low over 7 at Goodwood, but a few of those who are drawn very low won't be going forward. So I wouldn't worry too much about the draw in this race. And I thought River Pride, fundamentally, she's very professional. You get a reasonable price about her as well, because Richard Hannon's got 3 in the race. Pat Dobbs rides her. Always happy to have Pat Dobbs on a supposed Richard Hannon second string.
I like having Pat Dobbs and horses that are back from 33s down to 11 to 4 in Kempton on a Wednesday night.
As long as you're on the 33s.
Yeah, or 25. Yeah. I'll take 25s. I'll absolutely take 25s as well. Yeah, landing a big gamble for Jimmy Fox, wasn't it, on Wednesday. Right, Evocative Spark for Matt and River Pride for Rory. Moving on to the quarter past two. It's a listed race over a mile and a quarter. Majestic Dawn, last year's Cambridgeshire winner, is the 130 favourite. Move in Time for Roger Varian is 9-2. Fairly likely race, only 4 starts the last couple of seasons. 5-1 Stormy Antarctic, 6-1 Brentford Hope. Will he get the rain? And Victory Chime is 7s, 8-1 Bar. Straight back to you, Rory.
Yeah, there's rain around today in the Goodwood area, but the question is how much there's going to be and how much that will dry out on Saturday, because it's going to be warm and sunny on Saturday, according to the forecast. But it's been wet here where I am, which is, I wouldn't want to walk to Goodwood from here, but it's vaguely the same neck of the woods. So there will be some rain. It will have turned the ground on the softish side of good, certainly today. Whether that'll be soft enough for Brentford Hope, I don't know. I think he wants it genuinely soft or even heavy to be seen to his very best. He's still got a chance here, and you can give a chance to many of them. I'm inclined to forgive Majestic Dawn, a disappointing effort at Chester, where he just did too much in front. He got involved in a bit of a war, raced quite freely under Rob Hornby and didn't get home. That was disappointing, but he's proven to be a very reliable customer over the last couple of years. His horse I got a big soft spot for because I napped him when he won the Cambridgeshire, which did me a massive turn at the time. And he's got better since that. He's run well at the track. He ran well in the Chesterfield Cup last season, where they didn't lead with him. And his best form has come, as you saw in that Cambridge. He led every yard of the way there. He's a very strong galloper normally, and he just wants to use himself early in a race. So I think we'll go back to front-running tactics with him, Jim Crowley on board. And he will take all the beating if he's back to his best form. And the thing about him is he normally hits his best form. You know, he doesn't run too many bad races. So given that was a seasonal reappearance at a track that wouldn't really have suited him either, I'm inclined to put a line through it. He'd be a much shorter price if he hadn't gone to Chester, quite frankly. So he's around, 4-1, 9-2? I think that's fair enough.
Frank Hickey's listening to you again. 130 on offer at the moment. Ooh. Yeah. The Cambridgeshire 2020.
Frank knows
the score for sure. Matt, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Rory's made a good case. I think Majestic Dawn certainly showed that Cambridgeshire win was no fluke subsequently, even though he's a big price on the day, and it was a great tip from Rory at the time. The thing here is I'm kind of using Rory's horse in this race, because the one thing that Majestic Dawn does give you usually is a guaranteed gallop. And once you have a guaranteed gallop in a race, usually the puzzle becomes a little bit more easy. Obviously, from my point of view, from the horse I'm tipping up, I'm going to hope that something takes Rory's on. If Majestic Dawn gets an uncontested lead, that's going to be dangerous. But the defending champion in this race is Stormy Antarctic. Now, he won this on soft last year. It's not going to be soft, although, as Rory says, we're recording this pod on Thursday. On Friday, aren't we? Friday,
it's
lunchtime.
Friday, yeah.
On Friday lunchtime. And it is lashing. I mean, I'm in London. It's lashing down here. It's meant to be lashing down pretty much everywhere at the moment. So the ground is not going to get faster than good. And it might get a bit softer. And Stormy Antarctic has form on good to firm, even though I would think everyone would agree he's a better horse on with give. Look, there are things to take on trust. He's got to be fit first time out. But I'm a great fan of Richard Kingscote, who may be winning the Kazoo Derby in a week or so's time. And I think Stormy Antarctic is a great each way bet at around 5-1. I cannot have him out the first three because everything sets up for him to finish off well. And he is the defending champion. So I think he's got a great place chance at least.
Okay, so Majestic Dawn for Rory, Stormy Antarctic for Matt, and I can tell you, Matt, maybe raining in London, it's glorious in Ireland at the moment.
Well, make the most of it, because that's the one day of the year that you're going to have anything other than rain.
Sunny skies, it never rains in County Wicklow, the Garden County, I can tell you that now. That is a lie. Right, the 2 o'clock, we'll move to Haydock. Haydock is the feature meeting on ITV. It all boils down to a couple of big sprints, but we're going to kick off with a two-mile flat handicap. Bandinelli for Charlie Appy, James Doyle, the 5-2 favourite, because William Buick, of course, at the Curragh. That's the 5-2 favourite. 9-2 for Gubernator, 11-2 Valley Forge. Now, that has seen really good each-way support. It was twice that price earlier on, just about a day ago. 7-1 Miranda for Paul Nichols and his daughter Megan. 15-2 Just Hubert and 9-1 Barb. Straight back to you, Matt. Are you going to be at Haydock? And give us the winner of the 2 o'clock.
I'm going up to Haydock. I'll be there late on Friday night. I'm looking forward to it. I'm always, well, hopefully a big crowd might buck the trend in recent weeks here in the UK. Look, I thought the first two races at Haydock were horrible as far as betting were concerned, in that you could make chances for load of them. When you get horrible races, I try and pick something that maybe is a slightly bigger price. And although he's never won a race, and there are lots of reasons to go against him, I'm going to have a little bit each way on Gustav Holst for James Doyle and Richard Hannon. This is a likely front runner. It's a front runner's track. He's got a second at Windsor off a mark of 75 over this trip, which gives him every chance. He's off 75 here. And he's going to be a double-digit price. Look, I'm not suggesting in any way he's a good thing, but I do think he has a little each-way chance at what are going to be big odds. And for me, it was a race that I didn't want to back anything short here. I'd rather not have a bet than back something short-ish. So okay. I've gone for something biggish.
That's in the 125. My apologies. I was actually reading at the 2 o'clock. So ITV are clearly showing the 125 as well, are they?
Yeah. Well, as far as I'm aware.
They are, which is a strange one because it's a class 5 handicap.
It's a very strange one. It's a class 5 handicap. Yeah. So, fair play, Gustav Holst. Rory, to the 2 o'clock, had you a thought on that one?
I had a quick look at it. I clipped it over very quickly because it wasn't on the schedule. But I thought there were one or two, a race I wouldn't really want to get involved in. I thought Screaming Petrus for Dave Lochnan might be interesting. He was well beaten on fast ground on his return at Ascot, but he's bred to be a lot better than that. And I could see him improving a chunk. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit more from Longclume for Daniel and Claire Kubler. But I find it difficult to have an outstanding selection in the race.
No,
Songo's favourite for Milton Harris, who's had a tremendous time of things over jumps, and he's been transferring that form onto the flat. He's got every chance. But again, you know, you're backing him on the basis of a Bath win in a four-runner race. So it gives you an idea of where you stand with the race. I'd rather be with something unexposed there, but I wouldn't want to be getting too involved.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's the 125, just to reiterate there, a late addition to the ITV card. Gustav Holst, certainly for Matt, won a tentative selection. A horse has never won a race, but no better time to do it than on a Saturday afternoon. The aforementioned 2 mile handicap, which will be, by the way, an extra place race. I'm desperate to get your thoughts on this race, lads. I'm actually three times now. So I'll try again for the third time. Matt, have you a view on the 2 o'clock at Haydock?
Tell you what, I you know what, the 125 I had a look at, but that just didn't interest me at all. So I went straight to the 2 o'clock and just left it out. Anyway, but it is a wide open heat, the 2 o'clock, and a tricky race. You know what? There's a horse in here who finished placed in this last year at a big price. He'll be a biggest price again, but he's got place games claims again, and it's Just Hubert. for the Grassic-Muir combination. He was third in it off the same mark 12 months ago. He had a spin at Ascot the other day, which should have blown away the cobwebs. Nicola Curry takes the ride. I think he's got every chance of hitting the frame again. Not a race that I have a strong opinion on.
Yeah.
But I'll take a chance on Just Hubert each way.
Okay. Extra place race, Just Hubert. Nibbled that 9 cent to 15-2. Rory, 2 o'clock header. Big race of the day.
I've always been a big fan of Just Hubert. He's a bit of a character. I was on him when he refused to race in the Goodwood Stakes last year, a race he'd won the previous year, which was very annoying because he clearly wasn't going to be lining up and the starter let them go anyway.
Well, that's one with no stalls,
that's,
is it?
That's a race without the stalls. We start right in front of the stands. Yeah. And it was exceptionally annoying because I was on Anti-Post and on the day and got nothing back from my returns.
You clearly didn't bet on Paddy Power. I'm certain we would have given money back, Rory.
You probably would have. Sadly, no, I didn't. He won his next two then. He gets on well with Nicola Curry. He's a tricky horse, Just Hubert, as you can see from the fact that he wouldn't line up. Last year, Tom Marcon's had won the same race in him the previous year, gave him one of the rides of the season, I thought. Prior to that, he'd taken the mickey out of Tom's girlfriend, Tom's wife even, on his previous start. And not many horses do that. Very few horses get the better of Holly Doyle, but I thought he did on his previous start. And I thought, you know, under a different ride, he might be an interesting one. And he has blossomed. He's a lot better than the result on his return. They dropped him back to 9.5. He stays 2.5. So that wasn't going to be his trip. So I do quite like Just Hubert. But I'll tell you who I've actually backed in this race.
Hello.
And I think that's what it should all be about, really. And it's a real shot in the dark, this. And it's a small bet because I don't know what to expect. But the market seems to be expecting nothing of Morveo. And I've read the report of his Newbury run last time out, the time form report. And it basically says, this will be running over hurdles in the autumn. So he's just getting wind up for that. They paid 160,000 for him last autumn off the flat from Christophe Ferland. They didn't stick him over hurdles last year. And now they're running him in good class handicaps in the flat. This isn't a hurdler. This is not a JP hurdler, Morveo. I know he's with John Joe and he's owned by JP. And that suggests that that's what they want to do. But either they tried it and he didn't take to it at home, or that wasn't the plan at all. He's got good form in France. You know, he's a winner in listed company with Dig in the Ground. He stays a mile and six well. He was not fancied on his belated return at Newbury, but he did make a bit of late ground under fairly tender handling, I thought. I suppose the reason you might not fancy him here is that his form in France came when he was blinkered and he hasn't got any headgear on. But again, I don't see why if you thought this horse just needed a few runs around to get down the handicap, or if you were just preparing him for a summer jumps campaign, why would you book Tom Marcond?
Mm.
You know, John Joe's got plenty of jockeys close to hand he can go. The fact they've gone to Tom Marcond for this suggests that he's in here with some sort of chance. Now, his chance isn't easy to identify on paper, but I don't. He's put in at 50-1 by one or two firms. I think he's 28th with Paddy Power. Because he looks like he's unfancied, you might end up seeing him drift from that price as well. But I'm inclined to throw a few bob at him on the basis that everyone's very cynical about runners in these colours when it looks like they're not laid out to win and therefore they ignore them. And I just think this horse has been bought for a flat campaign. He doesn't have a jumps pedigree at all. He's got a proper sort of, you know, decent staying flat pedigree. You don't see too many Archie Pinkles over hurdles or doing well over hurdles. And I just thought he was interesting. Very, very hard horse to nail down. But at 28-1 and bigger, or a bit of 50-1, I'd have a little go.
He was 50-1. You're dead right. He's now down to 28-1 at the time of recording. Extra place race as well. You've got an extra place to fall into if you do back him each way. That's number 5, Morveo for Rory, whilst a little bit more, well, shorter price anyway for Matt Just Hubert, but still a nice each way price of 15-2. Right, we got the selections for the 2 o'clock at Haydock. That was great, lads. We've got one more race to look at Haydock, unless ITB are throwing something else in late doors. The 2:35, well, of course, we've got the two group races as well. But the last handicap we'll look at is the Silver Bowl. It's a mile handicap. And I'm going to go back to you, Matt. This is a traditional question, one we have often around these sort of races over the course of the summer. Is a John and Thady Gosden potential improver, group horse and handicap at 5-4, Mighty Ulysses, too short? Or is it one that you just go, this is going to be running in group and listed races later?
You know, of course, if you knew the answer to that question, Patrick, we'd all be millionaires. I'll be very interested to see what Rory says about this race. Look, My immediate reaction was, whatever happens here, I want to take on mighty Ulysses because he's 5-4 in the Silver Bowl. But the problem is he's on 101, so he doesn't have to be a group horse. He only has to be verging on listed class. And then you've got Benoit de la Sayette taking off 5. So his rating effectively goes from, depending on how you look at these things, but you could argue his rating goes from 101 to 96. So he's on 96, which isn't listed class. It's below listed class, or what should be below listed class. Now, it depends, of course, if you think Benoit de la Sayette is worth his £5, but I would argue he is, and his form figures over the last couple of weeks have been sensational. And then I went through all the others, and I just couldn't find anything that I fancied against him. Now, I'm sort of left in this boat that I don't really fancy any of the others, but would I back Mighty Ulysses at 5-4? The answer to that is no. I think at this time of year, you can find a lovely little novice hurdle somewhere with 5-4 shot with decent bumper form. You know, you don't have to go in at a race like this at 5-4 with effectively a horse that none of us know whether he is group class or listed class, etc. But as a selection, I was left with no choice but to tip up Mighty Ulysses, and I'll be giving him a great big boom if he wins, but I won't be having a penny on him, I can tell you that much.
That's fair enough. Okay, you've landed on Mighty Ulysses, but you're far from confident, or maybe not confident as well, but you're far from keen on that price. Rory, your thoughts on this?
Reasonably similar, to be honest. He does stand out, Mighty Ulysses, in terms of what he might achieve. Again, how this race is liable to be run as well. It looks like there's going to be lots of pace on here. You've got confirmed front runners in Dirty Old Town, Spirit Catcher, Mr. Wilson, and then you've got a couple of others who've made the running recently. City Runner made the running at Sandown last time out, there's one other in there, I think, that's also made the running. Well, Ring of Beer made the running in a Group 3 last year. Tollard Royal made the running when he won at Beverly. So it looks like there's going to be a lot of pace on here. Normally you'd be a little bit worried about being drawn out in stall 9, but it's not the biggest field in the world, and the fact that there's so many of them are going to go forward means that Benoit de la Sayette should get a perfect sit in behind. So I would not want to be a bookmaker on course laying this horse at odds against. But I don't tend to put up short priced horses in races like this. I'll mention one that I put up last time he was due to run. I know Frank was keen on him as well, and that is City Runner. We both liked him at Chester, given how well he ran at Sandown. Now, the general consensus in that Ayrshire Cup was that Jamie Spencer rode a tremendous race from the front, and City Runner was slightly flattered by it. I'm not at all sure. I think he's just improved for stepping up and trip this season. So he ran very, very well in his previous start at Wolverhampton, proved that it wasn't a case of him being an all-weather horse with that tremendous run in the Ayrshire Cup, which is always a really well-run race. And I fancy him to win a handicap off his mark. The problem with backing him here is the fact that there are so many other front runners in the race. You've got to change the jockeys. Well, Marco Gianni takes over. I wouldn't say that's a massive negative. Marco was just an absolute joy to watch riding last season. I think he was the find of the year. So I'm not too worried about that jockey change. I'm just worried the City Runner might get involved in a speed battle. But then again, they might just change tactics a little bit on him as well, because he's tracked the pace in the past. So he might just be happy enough to sit in, you know, just behind whoever goes on to lead here. And I think City Runner will outrun his odds. And he is, he'd be double figure prices, won't he?
He's 14-1.
So yeah, so he's appealing from an each way point of view. I wouldn't get too heavily involved in that. The problem with backing a horse each way when your potential angle is his pace is when there's so much other pace that can be destructive. And it's not, you want to have a horse ideally in a race like this running on through beaten horses to get placed at the end. And he doesn't quite fit that bill, but the price does. So he'll be my selection.
Fair enough. Okay, so pretty tentative thoughts. I think it's fair to say that it's a tricky race to get around. Mighty Ulysses, he was 7-4. He's now 5-4. It'd be interesting to see if he goes back out. And one thing I forgot to flag is Gavin Cromwell's got a runner in this race, Mr. Wilson, who was touched on, and he's nearly halved in price from 8 to 9 to 2. Okay, onto the group race action at Sandown. Back-to-back sprints. First up, it's the Sandy Lane. This one for three-year-olds. Again, I think this is about the 17th Commonwealth Cup trial we've had in the last couple of weeks. Go Bears Go is the 7-4 favourite. Cracking two-year-old, and looks like he's trained on by virtue of his win last time out. El Caballo is 5-2. It's 9-2 Flaming Rib. Go Bears Go 7-4. I'm not sure if I mentioned the price. Keturah for Clive Cox, who does so well with sprinters, is 7-1. And then it's 14's Bar. I'll go straight back to you, Rory. There is an Irish Raider in Beauty Inspire for Ger Lyons, obviously Colin Keane riding at the Curra. That's a 16-1 shot. Looks a very good two-year-old, that Beauty Inspire. Your thoughts, though, on the Sandy Lane?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule a Beauty and Spire out. I don't know why, but Gerard Lyons has got a surprisingly poor record traveling horses to the UK. He talks about it, you know, in the past about, you know, there are plenty of opportunities at home for the horses. He doesn't like traveling them unless there's a good reason for it. But actually, his strike rate with runners in the UK for the last few years is surprisingly poor for such a good yard. But Beauty and Spire is a big price, so I wouldn't put anyone off. I thought this was a tricky race. The two horses I like are drawn on opposite sides, and I'm not sure. You could argue that if one of them is badly drawn, the other is well drawn. But I could see that you could be scuppered by the draw on either side of the head. It's such a hard course to read in terms of where you want to be. It seems to change all the time there. There's often a golden highway at Haydock, but working out where it is virtually a thankless task. The blindingly obvious one is El Caballo. He's drawn an 11 of 11. Now, you don't always want to be drawn very high at Haydock, but there are times when it's a big plus. He's got the speed to go where he wants, though. He was an impressive winner at the three-year-old final at Newcastle on Good Friday. And, of course, the horse he beat there, Tiber Flow, won at Newbury last weekend. So the form is very strong. The pair of them pulled well clear. Despite it looked like it's going to be a blanket finish with a furlong and a half to go. The pair of them pulled clear. They look well above average. I don't think either of them will have any trouble going back to turf. El Caballo is a winner on heavy ground, for example, last season. It's just a different program now. And if you've got a three-year-old, who's going to make up into a high-class horse at this sort of trip, you've got the opportunities now with the all-weather finals to actually give them a preparation for that. Whereas years ago, horses switching from the all-weather to the turf at this stage of the season, you'd wonder whether they'd handle it. It's not an issue with him at all. And he deserves to be favourite. Arguably, he could be shorter than he is because a few of these were very good two-year-olds. Sprinting two-year-olds don't always train on into being good three-year-olds. El Caballo has shown that he has progressed very well. So he's the obvious one. The other one I quite like, I'm now trying to get my head around the draw overnight, but it's never that easy. The other one who appealed to me to a degree was Flaming Rib, who I thought would run reasonably well in his reappearance in the Greenham Stakes, and he missed the break there and he was held up and he never got into the race. He wasn't beaten that far in the end, but he couldn't figure. He then went to Chester over five furlongs and won a conditions race there, beating King's Lynn. I thought that was a good performance given that he's not a five furlong horse. They tried him over seven in the Greenham. They think he's bred to stay. He's by Ribchester out of an Acceleration mare. He definitely wants at least six furlongs. And the step back up and trip will help him. The question is, being drawn in stall one, I don't know whether that's going to be a good thing for him. And although he showed a fair degree of speed at times last season, he sat just off the pace at Chester again. Whether they want to lead with him in this field, I don't know. So there are too many question marks for me about how he will run tactically. So I'll end up sticking with El Caballo, but I think Flaming Rib is still an interesting horse this season.
Fair enough. El Caballo 5-2. The money for Go Bears Go has him as favourite now. Matt Chapman.
It's funny. One man's quite tricky and complicated race is another's easy race. And that's just the nature of horse racing. I think Go Bears Go is an absolute good thing here. I think Flaming Rig, well, both the Hugo Palmer horses could go and set the pace. El Caballo could set the pace. I know it's a six furlong race, but I think there will be a strong gallop in this. I'm not so confident as Rory about horses who improve on the all weather and then immediately transferring it back to turf. But the only thing that stops me absolutely going crazy about Go Bears Go is because I don't know whether El Caballo will transfer. And his attitude has been terrific on the all-weather. I've loved his attitude, El Caballo. He's a beautiful horse. But we've got a horse here who was second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. Now, the Turf Sprint is not the most competitive race in American racing, but it's still a grade one. It's still an absolutely top-notch event. Came back at Ascot. I thought he ran a beautiful race there. Eras was well beaten, but as we know, Eras probably should have won at Newbury last week and was just touched off in a photo. And this is a horse who has the speed for six, but could stay seven if they wanted. I actually was there at Ascot that day and talked to the connections about the horse at length, because the big question was, would this go perhaps Commonwealth Cup or Jersey Stakes, Go Bears Go? And I think the Commonwealth Cup was really what they want to do because they want to run in group ones. I think he's a group one sprinter. I just think he's different class to this lot. So I'm very, very keen on him. One thing about Eras, incidentally, because obviously I was very annoyed that he got beat at Newbury last week, and I did mix it with Richard Hills and Angus Gold straight after that race, and they weren't quite as frustrated as I was. And what they said at the time was that they had been trying to teach Eras how to race properly in his first two starts this season. And that was at Ascot, where he was hung out wide with Go Bears Go and travelled really well, but didn't really finish off. Then at Newbury, probably for the first time in his career, when the whip came out, he responded and ran right to the line. So I would hazard a guess, wherever Eras goes next time, if he's ever going to fulfil the potential he showed at Ascot as a juvenile last season, that will be the time to lump on. Now, the only problem with that is it might be in the Commonwealth Cup. But if it isn't, and even if it is, I think Eras is still a horse with huge potential. But as for this race, I think it's simple. Go, Bears, go. And I can tell you right now, because I don't like to keep people waiting, that will be my nap of the day, Patrick. Although Paddy is waiting very patiently.
He's already, isn't he? He's listening away in the background. You can't see it, folks, but he's listening, taking it all in. We will bring him in. Don't worry. We will bring him in.
he's actually looking like a man in total panic. It's like, oh my God, this is a professional horse racing podcast.
He's a total pro. Nothing new to that man. Right, we're going to go on to the second big sprint on the card at Haydock. This is the Temple Stakes. This is the 5 furlong race. It's got Nunthorpe, the winner of the Nunthorpe, I should say, Winter Parrot, who heads the market at 13-8. Things didn't quite go to plan after that Nunthorpe win. Came from the dark, also disappointing a run last went 9-2. You got Twilight Calls for Henry Candy and the Sheely Parks hooks at 5-1. 13-2 Kings Lynn, who's already been mentioned, was behind Flaming Rib earlier on this season. Last Crusader for Carl Burke is 9s. The rest are double figure odds. It's an open looking renewal, and we're going to go with an extra place in the race as well to help. I'm going to go straight back to you, Matt.
I mean, yeah, it's an open looking renewal with a 13-8 favourite, Patrick.
If you don't fancy her, then it's open.
Well, look, it's a tricky one for punters here, because strictly on the figures and on paper, if Winter Power produces her best, she's not going to just win. She's far too fast for this lot. You know, the dark horse always comes late and fast. Twilight looked as though was progressive. It got beat last time and there's a mountain to find on ratings, although clearly is improving for Cheveley Park Stud. But that's the problem for me. If Winter Power turns up in anything like her best form, she doesn't have to be at her best, but anything like it, she's just going to blitz this lot for pace. If she doesn't, almost any of the others could win. So I'm Winter Power, but she's one of those that it won't surprise me if she wins or finishes last, to be quite frank. She's that kind of horse.
Well, for her followers, they hope it's a win. Rory?
I think she wins. I see this race very much like Matt sees the previous race. I think the key to her is that she can go too fast for her own good and save nothing for the finish, as she did in the King's Stand last year. But when she's good, when she won at York twice last season, she was tremendous. Her win in the Nunthorpe was a very smart piece of form, which was then franked subsequently. You could have marked it down by the fact that the second was quite a big price, but then he went and won a Group One next time out. She's really solid. Obviously, she's disappointed a couple of times since that. Ascot, I wouldn't even run her in the King's Stand. Ascot's not really her track because she wants to blaze. And you've got to save something for the final furlong at Ascot. You want to be going on strongly at the finish, whereas she wants to win her race by halfway. The way she burned off the Wes Ward colt at York last year was just absolutely devastating. And her speed in the first three furlongs of a race are what wins her races. And she just wants a flat track. You know, anything that doesn't have an uphill finish, anything that basically puts the emphasis on early speed, and she looks very, very good indeed. And I can see her bouncing back to her best. She's always gone well fresh. She's clearly not, you know, she's quite a buzzy filly. She's clearly not hard to get fit. So I can't be against her here. The interesting thing is looking at what might happen behind her and trying to pick a forecast. What you'll find in this race is you'll find that most of them will be off the bridle behind her early on, trying to match her speed. And then the chances are that something will come from well off the pace, who's not even tried to go the gallop early on, and run on strongly through horses to get a place. And you could do that at a biggish price. Moss Gill makes a fair degree of appeal for that, because he tends to just miss a beat at the start, and then he does tend to go on strongly to finish his races. But I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Mondemage at an absolutely huge price running into the frame here. You could back him each way if you want. I'm thinking of playing, two or three forecasts winter power to beat a few of the outsiders. Moscow's not going to be a huge price. I'd include him. I would include Montemej. You could include Arecibo. I mean, that suits him. He finished in front of her at Ascot last year, but he's drawn right on the wing. And I think that probably doesn't suit him given where the speed is in the race. But he's the kind of horse who has a habit of running on late in his races to grab a place as well. So that's how I'll play it. The two, as I said, who appeal at this stage, King's Lynn would be the other one. So I would have Winter Power to beat Mossgill, King's Lynn, Mondemej, hoping for Mondemej for the jackpot, essentially.
Okay. And I should have got Paddy to host this episode, because the last time Paddy hosted, you managed to get the tri-cast up with the Victoria Cup. It's a really easy, small handicap, the Victoria Cup.
You start with the high numbers and then you stop.
You did well there. Okay, so Winter Power to win, and then watch out for Mount Damage, Mossgill, and King's Lynn. That'll be your, you'll put those together in your little perm them together, and those three come home, or three of those four come home. Happy days.
Yeah, it's all about her winning the race, though. I'm not suggesting a combination. Her to beat those three bets.
Okay. All right. Lovely. We'll see how that goes. We'll move on to York, lads. Before we go to York, just a reminder for those who are listening behind, I wish the jumps was back. There is an excellent card at Auteuil on Saturday. I haven't asked the lads the previews. I'm just flagging this up, including three Willie Mullins runners in the 4 o'clock. Matt, I assume it's on Sky Sports Racing. Auteuil, it's got to be, right?
All the best French racing on Sky Sports Racing.
Good man, gave you a good chance here to get in. Good company, man. Yeah, look, 4 o'clock or two, you've got Classical Dream, Paul Townend rides, Ken Boy under Rachel Blackmore, and Danny Mullins will ride Tornado Flyer. They take on one of the top notchers in France, L'Autonomie. She's won about €1 million. At 4 o'clock, that's their champion hurdle, which is like 3 miles, isn't it? It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, bizarre. Yeah, the champion hurdle is over 3.25 miles nearly. But anyway, that's just one to watch out for Jumps fans, and it'll be live in Paddy Power shops as well. Okay, let's go to York, and we got two races to cover. The first is an extra place race. It's a sprint. Alligator Alley's the 4-1 favourite for David O'Mara. We always look for his horses at York. Knight on Earth has been well backed for Mick Appleby, 9's down to 7-1. Lookout Louis 13-2. And Atalas Bay is 8-1 as Joao has just been nibbled at into 15-2. Rory, this is an open race. Never mind what Matt tells me. What are your thoughts?
I was tempted by Jawal again, favorite of mine, a horse who picks up a couple of races every season and has done me a few good turns. I was concerned about stall one for him because I'm not sure he's the kind of horse who wants to be right out on the far wing like that. But he really caught the eye here. It was 10th of 13 here at the Dante meeting. You want to watch that race back to see how much he catches the eye. I don't think he comes off the bridle in the race. To be perfectly honest, he goes for a gap about a furlong and a half out and it closes in front of him. And Paul Morenin's like, well, never mind. There'll be another day for him. And pretty much lets him coast home after that. That's with sprinters at this trip. If you don't get your gap when you need it, first of all, that's usually your race gone. If you're a group one performer, maybe you can switch and come again. But with these regular sprint handicappers, everything needs to drop right, generally speaking, for things to work. And it didn't work for him last time out, but don't judge him on that. He's got plenty of form at York and he should bounce back. But I'm going to go for one who I think I went for at the Dante meeting as well. I backed him at the Dante meeting anyway. And he caught my eye. Zargun for Scott Dixon. Now, he ran in a race that was the yard one with Fine Wine. And he only finished sixth. But he just gave the impression he was a length and a short head behind Alligator Alley, who's favourite for this race, and Zargon's quite a big price. But he had to be pushed along to take a position. Looked like he was going to then drop out of it with two furlongs to go before staying on very strongly again inside the final furlong. Just your archetypal blowing up after a break, I thought. He's a horse who doesn't hold his form for very long, so he's usually want to back him. Sort of first couple of runs after a break. He's got a very good record at York. He was a Group 3 sprinter in Germany back in the day, and he did well. He was placed at York on his debut for Scott Dixon last year at a massive price, and he was then placed in this race as well when showing plenty of speed. He lost his form in midsummer, came back in the autumn, and was again placed here. So he ran three times at over five furlongs at York. He was placed all three times. So his last run was the first time he's not been placed here, but he still gave the impression that there was plenty more to come from him. He's been dropped £2 for that effort as well. He's drawn and stalled 14 of 14, but he was placed in this race from 14 last year. So the stall doesn't worry me. He's the kind of horse who wants to be able to do it on his own anyway. You know, with a lot of horses who want cover, for example, they want speed around them because it helps them get through the race. Other horses want to be able to have room to do their own thing. And Zargon's more in the latter camp. So I quite like the fact that he's got a bit of speed near him in Atalas Bay. But the two of them should have plenty of room to operate in. And I thought he'd come on for that run. And if he does, he gets placed here. So I thought he was a really solid bet. Are you going four places in this or just the two?
We are, Rory. Come on. That's very nice. Come on. We are.
I would definitely put Zargon up there. And in fact, given Matt has done this already, I will make him my bet of the weekend as well.
Oh, lads, really, really. We need people to listen to the end of the pod so we get all the metrics. Come back to that as
well. My problem normally is I'll talk about 14 races and say, and what's your nap? And I'm like, I've got no idea. I can't remember what I said 10 minutes ago.
All right, Zargon for Rory, 12th one at the start of recording. I get the feeling from the groan when you started talking about Joelle coming from the other side of the podcast that Matt is keen on Joelle.
Well, I mean, I tipped Joelle up last time, and for a long and a half hour, I thought, hello, lads, we're going to absolutely hack up here. And he gradually cruised to the back of the field. It's like, I mean,
that's a fair description, actually.
Yeah, the jockey never moved, and he traveled like a travelly thing, and then just still traveled like a travelly thing as he dropped out. Look, I don't blame Kinect. I imagine it was just blowing cobwebs away, and perhaps he ran a bit too free for Joelle. I'm not so worried about the draw as Rory. I'm more worried about just what mood he's in. For me, he's one of those moody horses that I think he's probably a lot better than even his current rating, which is actually quite high for a handicapper. But I just think if he's in the mood on the day, he picks up. And if he's not in the mood, he doesn't. I've no idea whether he's going to be in the mood on Saturday. But if he is, I think the comeback run showed that he still has the ability to win a race off this kind of mark. What he likes really is a strong gallop and to finish off well, which is exactly what he didn't do the other day. So I suspect he'll turn into a cliff horse for me, and I'll just tip him every podcast and every blog. And in the end, he will pop up at about 7-8 to 1 and he'll cover the losses. He's that kind of horse. Yeah. So I go in again.
Okay. Joelle for Matt and Rory, napping up each way, Zargon. Very brave shout on a big weekend of racing. One more race to look at, York, before we get to the curve, folks. It's a Group 3 over a mile and 3/4. It is the Bronte Cup. I'm not sure which Bronte it's named after. I'm going to go with Emily. 5-2, Believe in Love for Roger Varian, a Japanese-owned horse who's running some big races, the favourite. 130 Mighty Blue, Joseph O'Brien sending this one over. 4-1, Silence Please, Glenarkney 6-1, as is Urban Artist, and 7-1, Eileen Dover, remember her. And 25-1, Sea Sylph. Okay, Matt, straight back to you for the Bronte Cup.
Oh, I hated this race. When I went through it, I just hated it. I couldn't really find a reason to actually fancy any horse in the race. And when I say fancy, obviously you can pick them out, but to actually come up with a reason why something would go and win this one, I was really struggling. In the end, I came down probably quite simply on the side of Mighty Blue for Joseph O'Brien. Quite a decent hurdler, actually, Mighty Blue. I think was third in a mare's hurdle, something like that, back in the day. But I can't say I'm saying it with any confidence at all. Yeah. None of these horses particularly get me going, to be quite frank. There are a lot of horses in here that get placed a lot because they run in uncompetitive races. I'm not even sure that half of the field are deserving of the rating they've currently got, to be quite frank. You know what? This is the equivalent of any mare's race at the Cheltenham Festival, unless it's sponsored by Paddy Power, in which case it's amazing.
Yeah, it's not on this occasion. I don't think so anyway. So a very tentative vote for Mighty Blue. Rory?
I like this race a bit more, actually. Eileen Dover is out, by the way. She's just come out of the race. She was in when I looked 10 minutes
ago. She fell over.
She leaned over too far, apparently.
They're brutal, lads.
There's a filly I like in this race who was very frustrating last year. I backed her at big prices a couple of times, and she was a non-runner. She was pulled out of the Park Hill Stakes at Doncaster. And I was going to say the Princess Margaret, but it can't be that. There's a race at Newmarket over a mile and a half the following, around the same time that she was taken out of, both because of the ground, good to firm ground on both occasions. Ed Walker took her out saying she doesn't want good to firm ground. She wants a bit of dig in the ground to show her form, and she wants a trip. She really caught my eye when she was third in the Gulter Stakes at York. That was on quickish ground, which she clearly didn't seem to like, but she was going on really well at the finish. And I thought, this wins the Park Hill. And I was very keen to get on at a price. She was 40-1 for that. And I backed her at a big price for the Park Hill. The going came up quick again, and Ed Walker took her out. He then took her out later. And she finished her season with the ground right for her. She ran in the Gillies Filly Stakes at Doncaster's November handicap meeting. So right at the last day of the season. And she finished 6th of 18 there, but that was a mile and a quarter. So she'd been trying to run over a mile and six and a mile and a half. And she was taken out of those races because the ground was too quick. When the ground came right for her, her only option was to run over a trip that was too short for her. And she was staying on very strongly at the finish. Never figured with a chance, but she was passing beaten horses, hand over fist in the closing stages. She made a reappearance at Goodwood. Again, good to firm ground, which I'm guessing they got to the stage where we got to get a run into her because we want to run her in this race. So for a prep race, we'll risk her. And again, she did the same thing. She was settled to the rear of the field and she ran on late to be fourth. She absolutely needs a little bit of juice in the ground, which she will get here. And she needs a mile and six. And she gets both of those for the first time in her life. And I think that will make all the difference to her. And she's one of the few in the race who has scope to improve because she's never had her ideal conditions. Now, it may well be that give her ideal conditions and she turns out not to be as good as Connections thought, but I would certainly give her a chance at the prices. And she'd be one of the better bets of the weekend for me.
Yeah, sounds like almost like a next best. That's Glenartney. It's probably someplace up in Scotland with a horrific spelling. A hard one to spell, hard one to say. Glenartney for Rory and very tentative for Mighty Blue for Matt. Okay, that leads us to the 2,000 guineas over at the Courage Means, which means I get to say to Paddy Power, unmute yourself, Paddy, and you can join the party. Will you join that, Paddy?
Not really, to be honest. No, of course I was. It was riveting stuff, as always.
Well, Paddy,
like, this is like, you know, it's like the podcast unplugged. Like, this is from the horse's mouth. If I'm not on and normally listening to it tomorrow morning when I'm out going for a run or watching the kids sport or something like that. So now I get the honor of a live.
No one listening to this is believing that, Paddy. No one believes you listen to the pod.
He does. Every week, because it'll drive you mad. It'll drive, and funny enough, I actually did back Rory's combination forecast in the Victoria Cup. So,
What price did you get the forecast at? What was the forecast?
Was like 2,000 to 1 or something. No, it wasn't that big. It was 480 to 1 or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was all right.
That'll do.
No shorties in there.
As our producer just said, remember you called Rory contrary. You said, contrary.
Sorry, I meant that in like a positive way. He doesn't go a consensus or not a non-consensual. See, if I said he's non-consensual, that's even worse, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jeez. Cancelled.
I'd rather be contrary.
Yeah.
Everything is consensual in this podcast. Yeah. Just like to confirm that. Okay, let's talk about the Irish 2,000 guineas. We've got Native Trail. He was, of course, the big talking horse going into last season or going to this season. Second in the Newmarket version behind Kareem. He's 4-11, folks, at the time of recording. So, yeah, if you tip him up, fair play. You can tip him up, but I want what finishes second as well. Buckaroo, 4-1. Looked like he was going to be a Derby horse. Maybe not. Maybe he's a miler. He's 4-1. 11-1, the Aidan O'Brien-trained Ivy League, who's been supplemented for the race. Amazing that Aidan's have to rely on a supplementary entry. That must be rare enough. Atomic Jones, last time we'll see him, by the way. He's off to Hong Kong. Chair Lyons trains. He's 20-1. 20-1 Wexford Native for Jim Bulger. 33-1 and bigger the remainder. Paddy, as you've been listening intently, what are your thoughts on the Irish guineas?
I think Native Trail is going to be hard to beat.
Oh, hey, that's what we were waiting for.
actually, do you know what? He's obviously the most likely winner and did hose up at the Curragh last year over 7 furlongs, whatever race it was, in Ashley or something like that. But I'm actually taking a chance that his run in Newmarket might actually have kind of left a bit of a mark on him, beaten. Not used to getting beat, right? Not beaten by the Stable Companion, but it wasn't that long ago. And I was at the Curragh there a couple of weeks ago when Buckaroo ran. And I know, I understand it's a massive step up in class, but Buckaroo, like, discovered a whole new level of form that day. And I bumped into Kevin Blake after, who works closely with Joseph O'Brien, and we were just chatting about it. And he was like, they were buzzing about it, like, just to see that, geez, the horse really has shown it now, what they kind of believed at home. And I think Buckaroo just ran like a horse that has just taken its form to a different level, improving hand over fist, and needs to improve hand over fist to trouble Native Trail. But I'm going to take a chance that Buckaroo causes a bit of an upset.
Win only or each way?
Win only. Sure, it's 4-1.
Ooh, okay. Matt Chapman.
Look, you don't have to bet in every race, but I would just advise anyone who's having a bet just to stick Native Trail in as a bit of a booster to any bet you're having on Saturday. I look at it very different. Look, I know Paddy really thinks that Native Trail is going to hack up, but he doesn't want to set. But, you know, you're not talking about any old horse here. This was the champion juvenile who came back with a very satisfactory win, even if it wasn't completely amazing in the Craven. And then, while he was beaten in the 2000 Guineas, there are arguments you could make if you really wanted to that he might have been beaten by the draw in that race as much as anything. I don't think that is necessarily the case, but you could certainly argue that if you wanted to. But even if he wasn't, you know, we know Luxembourg was the big derby hope of Ballydoyle, and the way Aidan's talked about Luxembourg, although you can't always take Aidan at face value talking about his horses, but they do seem to think he is some sort of machine. Caribus is clearly a machine. His form is so much better than the rest of them. And the other thing is, I mean, if they were genuinely umming and arming whether Buckaroo should run in the Derby or this, Native Trail is going to completely outdo Buckaroo for pace. Because if they thought that that horse is a mile and a half horse, a Native Trail is just going to completely sprint past it. So, look, it's very boring. I'm not saying anything that probably 99.9% of the world don't think, but I would expect Native Trail to not just win this, but actually I could see almost like a Sariska type of victory where Buick just comes there basically not really moving. I think it will absolutely hack up.
You're right. It is very boring. Okay, so Rory, your thoughts on the
2000? Wow! Wow! To a colleague. Hold on. HR Matt, ring me a lot from Paddy Power, but I've never rung HR. I've got to find the number somewhere. That Rory, is shocking.
Rory, yes. Your thoughts.
I agree with Matt that I think there's no getting past the favorite here. One or two people try to put him down because he has a habit of needing to be, he races behind the bridle. Is the best example of that. There's been debate about whether he hits a flat spot in races. For me, he does, but it's just a case of, you know, the definition of hitting a flat spot has suddenly become controversial. But he keeps delivering. He did it again. And as Matt said, the draw was not kind to him at Newmarket. Nothing was winning races. From where he was drawn on Guineas weekend. You're much better off being drawn low. And being drawn 15 of 15 was a bit of a kiss of death, really. So the fact that he got so close was a tremendous performance. He probably ran his best ever race in doing so. And his form, we know he goes well at the Curra because his best effort as a two-year-old was a hugely impressive win in the National Stakes here. There are no holes in him. I don't think it was 3 weeks ago he ran in the Guineas. It was second race of the season. So I don't have any issue with him suddenly recoiling now. He looks tremendously hardy. I mean, the whole thing about him is that he almost falls asleep in his races. So he doesn't take as much out of himself as some horses do. Can't be against him. The question is who finishes second. And I think you tend to find, you know, people will look for alternatives in the win market. And you end up having Buckaroo quite short in the betting there. You're not getting, you're probably betting also on Buckaroo finishing second. In the end, and that doesn't massively appeal to me. I thought Imperial Fighter, who's got the same official rating as Buckaroo, and who had very good form as a two-year-old, finishing second to Royal Patronage in the Acom, and then finishing second again to Caribus on his next start in the Autumn Stakes. He was one of the better two-year-olds around last season. He's 50-1 with Paddy Power for this. So I think you play him for the forecast, or you maybe just play him each way as well, because he's a horse who's basically run to form on every one of his starts. He was unlucky on his return. He was beaten in a listed race in Newcastle, but he came with a run and the gap closed on him. He ran out of room. And again, he was looked after when his chance had gone. That wasn't maybe as tremendous as they would have liked, but that would have been to blow the cobwebs away as well. And it still wasn't far short of the form he was showing last season. It was his first run on the all-weather too. And as a son of the Gurkha, he's going to appreciate the return to turf. And I see him running pretty well. I don't see him winning the Guineas, but I certainly see him finishing third or fourth. And at 50-1, I think that's worth either playing the forecast or backing him each way or doing a bit of both.
Yeah, or you can wait for it. Could even be up by the time this pod was released.
The favourites.
Yeah, you could play him each way. And if you get all 8 in that market because there's 9 horses due to run. So you take out Native Trail, you get the dead 8 each way. Betting without 50, well, he's not going to be 50-1. Obviously, he's going to be significantly shorter in that market. But
no, but you know, if he was if he was 10-1, he'd be appealing in that market.
Yeah. So okay.
Do an each way without permed exactor or something.
Thank you very much. That's the Irish 2000 Guineas covered. Obviously, Native Trail pretty much wins. Paddy taking him on Buckaroo. Matt, just judging by your comments, he's not only going to win. He's going to win by multiple lengths.
I think he should do. That's what I think. I think Bewitt will come there cruising. Then it's up to Bewitt how far he wants to win it. But I see no reason why he just won't quicken past this lot. I mean, he's quality animal. And the other thing is he was a big boy. He might not be quite as big now as they get a bit older, but he didn't look like a little ratty two-year-old. He wasn't going to train on. He had size and scope about him. Look, it's horse racing. Funny things happen. But I'll be stunned if Buckaroo beats him anyway.
The producer sent an awful joke about Buckaroo. I'm not even going to repeat it.
I think he'll shake them all off.
You're happy to repeat it.
I don't want to get into a massive debate about it because I know I'm most likely going to be wrong here. But like Native Trail, like not hugely impressive in comeback this year. Native Trail beaten in the Guineas. But the fact is they're closer to him than they were last year. Or else he hasn't trained on as much as you would have liked him to train on. Maybe that's because he's a big proof last year.
They're closer to him, Paddy. Who are you actually talking about?
Like a Guineas type field.
What, Coroebus and Luxembourg?
Yeah.
They're quite good horses, Paddy.
I understand that. But these
aren't quite good horses.
Well, we will see.
Harsh. Potentially harsh.
I can just see this being played back next week. Paddy just sitting there with this smug smile on his face.
Yeah.
Well, he might reach out and say, PK, just make sure I'm on next week after that.
I would never do that. I think I would always take the higher moral ground. As long as Matt knows.
That is genuinely true.
Look, when you say a 2-7 shot or something is a good thing,
4-11,
you're on a hiding to nothing.
Pretty much. Yeah, you are.
You can only come out of it badly, basically, because no one's going to care if it wins.
I mean, to be fair, it sounds like you're really confident on him and you do expect him to win, either depending on Bewick. If Bewick wants to win by 3 or 4 lengths, he can. If he wants to win on the snaff like Sariska and Jamie Spencer, he can. So if Native Trail does that, fair play, Matt. Like you said. Right. We want to get your naps before, Matt, you say goodbye. Just to reiterate your nap of the weekend.
My nap of the weekend is the good thing. Go, Bears, go, Haydock in the sandy lane. Going to sit and pounce and win, hopefully.
Perfect. And Rory, just to remind listeners, your nap of the weekend, it's a nice little each way one.
It is. It's at York in the 5 furlong handicap. Can't remember what time that is, but it's Zargon. It's like 2:45, I think, isn't it?
It's 2:55 Zargon, and it's an extra place race as well. We're going to take a quick break. Matt's going to say goodbye. We're going to look at the remainder of the... Goodbye, Matt. We're going to have a look at the remainder of the Curragh over the weekend.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Right, as promised, let's look ahead to the remainder of the Curragh on Saturday and a quick look ahead to Sunday as well. Let's start with the two-year race, Jove, at 2:10, lads. It is the Marble Hill Stakes, and we generally, see a Royal Ascot two-year in this race. I'd be surprised if we didn't on this occasion. And it's Gerlines versus Aidan O'Brien. Blackbeard unbeaten in 2 for Aidan. Gerlines Tough Talk, who lowered the colours of a well-touted horse on debut. They're at the 7-4 joint favourites. Mehmar from Michael O'Callaghan, 4-1. Another unbeaten Aidan O'Brien horse called Deneuve, 11-2 and 16's bar. Straight back to you, Paddy, the Marble Hill.
Okay, well, one of the many interesting things about this race is that Blackbeard and Tough Talk both won by a short head last time, and Nmar short head the last time. So what that says to me is that maybe none of them are deadly. Maybe they're all a bit Nmar. On that logic, I should be tipping up Nmar, but I'm not. I'm actually going to tip up Blackbeard because he's had 2 wins, and I think that's just a bit more experience might be the thing that just pushes in my favour. But I think my point is generally that I won't be getting too heavily involved here because I think that none is maybe a superstar. It's very unlikely 3 of them are.
But Blackbeard, the tentative vote, Rory?
I much preferred Tough Talk. of the two there. His Kura win has worked out pretty well. Beats Little Big Bear, who came with a big reputation, won next time out. And Shartash, who was third, also won next time out. So that form is working out. It looked like a pretty strong maiden race. And Tough Talk struck me as being the better of the two. You can look two ways at Blackbeard's form, the fact that he's had two runs. He's got similar form in the book. Do you say that that he's closer to his peak now after two runs and therefore vulnerable to a horse who's going to improve in Tough Talk? Or do you say that, you know, the experience will stand really well to him in this race and might give him a bit of an edge? I just wonder, how many times has Aidan won the Coventry Stakes with a horse who'd run three times before?
Gotta be zero.
And therefore, my gut feeling is, well, Blackbeard's a 6 furlong. Well, he might be a Windsor Castle horse or a Norfolk horse. If he's a Coventry horse, the fact that he'll be having three runs before going there doesn't fill me with confidence about his ability. So that's off-putting to me. And I thought Tough Talk should be more like even money here than it being essentially each of two. I thought Blackbeard had a little bit to prove in comparison, both in terms of the collateral form, in terms of his speed figures, the fact that he's had two runs to get his rating already. I thought Tough Talk was much more impressive looking on paper, and I thought he deserved to be a shorter price. The slight concern with him, I suppose, is that he's wearing a tongue tie, having won on debut, and that's, you know, that normally a tongue tie would be a little bit of a warning sign. But given he's wearing it after winning a race, maybe that's just a case of connections being a little bit careful. But yeah, he appeals by far the most of them.
Maybe Colin heard something or anyway. Yeah, so Tough Talk for Rory and attentive over Blackbeard for Paddy. Moving on to the Greenlands. This is a proper 6 furlong Group 2 sprint. It's got a Group 1 horse in Case of You, tops the weights. He's got to give weight away. He's the 5-2 favourite, dual Group 1 winner for Ado McGuinness, the undoubted stable star. Hugo Palmer sending over Brad the Brief with William Buick on board. Say that fast 5 times. Glenn Shiel also proper group horse. He's 5-1, as is Power Under Me for Jura Lines, and Gustavus Weston 7-1. A few old favourites, but the king of sprinters is Paddy Power. You know what wins these big sprints at the Curragh after your Sol Power days and Slade Power days. So give us the winner here.
Yeah, Slade Power won this race on his championship year. He did indeed when he was only half fit and he still hosed up, but there you go. Anyway, I think it's relatively straightforward for me. You said a proper Group 1 performer. He's won Group 1 over 5 furlongs, a Group 1 over 6 furlongs. He's won a Group 1 on Heavy and a Longchamp and a Group 1 on Good at Maidan. He's absolutely rock solid. I think he's well clear. I mean, I know he has to give weight away, but I think Case to You is the outstanding better horse in the race.
I'm glad you name checked him there, because on my feed you blocked out a couple of times, but I was pretty sure you were talking about a Case of You. Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't just me, Rory. Did Paddy just disappear there?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I thought it was probably just me, but
wasn't. A Case of You, Paddy is suffering internet problems, but we got his selection there. Right, Rory, your thoughts?
Yeah, I can't be against him, really. He's a fair price, isn't he? You know, Paddy's laid on the line there. He's won Group 1s over different trips and in different circumstances in different countries. You know, he's proven himself. He's improved enormously in the last year. But the fact that he's not reliant on any particular scenario makes him look really solid here. He does have to concede the penalty, but it's not a particularly big one. And it's not enough to think that the others are getting close to him. The only concern would be sometimes, you know, when you're flying them around the world, you go to Maidan for a few weeks and then you come back again. Are you ready to go straight away? And some horses have a bit of a hangover from going to Maidan, but others bounce back perfectly well. Listen, if it was an even money shot here, I'd say leave it alone. But he's 5-2. That has to be a very tempting price for punters, doesn't it?
Okay, right. Case of You. Strong case by both pundits for a Case of You in the Greenlands. We've already talked about the Guineas. Quick chat on the Orby Stakes, a mile and a half listed race. Wordsworth, who I put the kiss of death on this horse last year when I was like, oh, he might be Aidan O'Brien's Derby horse. Nah, he's not. And wasn't. 2-1 favourite, 9-2 for Akita Sushi, 6-1 Jason the Middleton for Henry de Bromhead. In the flat world, Henry de Bromhead, who's got some good runners this weekend on the flat, including Mo Salah, and I think he had one in the Guineas. So, Paddy, fresh off tipping him up in nearly every single horse he trains and over jumps. Are you going to put up Jason the Militant?
I am, actually, yeah. Yeah. I think, loves a bit of cut in the ground. I mean, I think I'm just looking out the window. I'm sure it's good dealing. He probably will get a bit of cut in the ground. I don't think, as long as it doesn't dry out too much, I think Jason the Militant is, like, he won a listed race. This is a listed race, right?
So
he won a listed race last time, way easier than the half-length margin suggested at Nace. I think he had loads left at the locker. And I think he's just just good. He's really good. He's old, he's eight, but he's, I think he's just a really good horse. He's going to be hard enough to beat.
He's a nice price. He's 6-1. Rory?
I didn't like it at all, quite frankly. I find
the race
it very,
or the horse?
No, the race. If I thought it was going to be soft ground, I probably would have gone Jason the Militant as well. But on ground that's liable to be good, my confidence is lower. But there's nothing else in the race that I'm desperately keen to. I'd love to see Bill Durkin win it, though.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Bill Durkin's got favourite moon off William Haggis. That'd be a tremendous result, wouldn't it? It's been a good year for the Durkin family already, but that would...
Yeah,
that'd be a tremendous
quite the double, the Midlands National,
Midlands
and, the
National
Orby,
and the Orby Stakes. Yeah,
the Orby Stakes were two very different races. Before we move to Sunday, lads, we've obviously got a couple of Group Ones on Sunday. A quick thought on the mile and a half handicap. If anyone had anything strong in the race,
I haven't seen prices yet, so I can't tell you it's good value or not. I'm assuming it's going to be a decent price. It was Golden Twilight for Mick Halford and Ronan Whelan. And the reason why it'd be ridden prominently but stays further than this, I think stays probably a mile and a half. I think it's one over a mile and a half, so stays further than a mile and two. So if he can dictate the pace, could stay in front. There's a couple of these finished in front on the last day, but in the recent seasons, he's kind of needed his comeback run before he's hit top gear. And so I'm assuming this was probably the premier handicap. So I'm assuming this is probably the target, and they're probably gearing up towards this. Like for half the field, it'll be the same thing. But the Golden Twilight, keep an eye on that if it's a decent price each way.
Should be a decent price. Rory, nothing on that? We move on to Sunday?
I'd like to have a slightly bigger price on it, but I thought Morakana is a filly who's still progressing. And I thought she's one to keep on side. Well, she's a Curra filly. She's won twice at Leopardstown. The form doesn't always translate between the two big tracks. But she's a nice sort, and Sheila Lavery's put Billy Lee to ride. So I thought she was the pick for me, but it's pretty much, you know, small stake stuff.
Fair enough. I think I called the mile and a half handicap. I was rightly corrected. It's a mile and a quarter. And a mile and a quarter is the trip for the Tattersalls Gold Cup, which is due off at 2:40 on Sunday. Prices just revised after the declarations came through just as we started this podcast. So I'll call them out. Lord North, you're 6-4 favorite. This is a very good renewal, by the way, folks. Lord North, 6-4 favorite. State of Rest, the globe-trotting superstar for Joseph O'Brien, back on home soil, 3-1, having won massive races in America, well, particularly Australia, 3-1. 7-2 for Alan Kerr, 6-1 Broom, 8-1 Max Sweeney, last year's hero this weekend in the 2000 Guineas. Helvic Dream won the race last year, 10-1. 12-1 High Definition, he was supposed to be a superstar. And 33-1 Bear Story, The Outsider. So we've got a big field, Rory. We sometimes can get 3 or 4 runner races here, but this is a big field and a good field.
It is. It's very, I mean, this you know, I've often wondered whether the Tattersalls Gold Cup is in danger of losing its Group 1 status, because you've often got a very good horse in it and then not much depth underneath that. And these races are judged by the ratings of the first three home every year. But it's in no danger this year, certainly with a field like this. Really good-looking contest. And you can make a case for pretty much everything at a price. So you should get some juicy odds on offer. Lord North is probably just about the pick. And he bounced right back to his best when winning at Maidan last time. But he was putting his place reasonably comfortably on his previous start by Alenker. And although Alenker didn't run particularly well at Maidan, stepping up to a mile and a half for the Dubai Shima Classic, I thought he proved when winning well at Lingfield that he'd trained on really well from 3-4. And he was largely an underrated horse last year. He didn't fire in the arc, and the ground was almost heavy in the arc, and a lot of the British horses have been on the go for most of the year, struggled in it. I'd ignore that. Aside from that, he did really well. And he was a bit under the radar with his win first time out in the Winter Derby. The rest of his form last season, I think, gives him every chance of winning this. And my only worry with backing 4-year-olds early in the season is getting them to prove that they've developed again from 3-4. But he definitely has, the way he won at Lingfield. I'd ignore the Maidan run, and I think he's solid each way.
Fair enough. Yeah, and William Haggis cannot train a loser at the moment. I was just looking at his stats. Remarkable for horse trainers, had 34 runners in the last 2 weeks. 47% of them, so basically half, have won from 34 runners. That's amazing. Paddy?
Yeah, I've kind of gone against Lord North, not because of Lord North, because of the odds, because he's 6-4. And yeah. Alan Kerr, I was thinking, because of obviously the having beaten Lord North a couple of runs ago. But actually, I've kind of come down and stayed a rest. He's also doubled the price at 3-1. I just thought it was too big of a differential because he's just obviously a really an iron horse. Like it's as hardy as they come, having won Group 1s last time in France and before that in Australia. So, I mean, it's double the odds of Lord North. I think it's too much of a differential. So I'm going to go for State of Rest.
And America at the time for that as well. That's some treble, isn't it? Grade 1s or Group 1s in America, Australia and France, your last three starts. I hope he shook Kevin Blake's hand when he met him and said, fair play, you've campaigned that horse fairly well. Unless it was Joseph's idea. You can ask him next week, Paddy.
Yeah, ask him as well.
You'll be meeting him. Right, a few more races I wanted to touch on. The Landwade Stud Stakes is a Group 2. No prizes at the time of recording for that. Any thoughts on that before we get to the Irish 1,000 guineas, Paddy?
I just went with Twilight Spinner here. Why did I do that? Won a Group 3 over 7 furlongs last time at the Curra by more than 3 lengths. Yeah, won a Group 3 by more than 3 lengths. So that suggests that he's better than Group 3 class. And this is a Group 2, obviously, but he's stepping up a bit. But he's not the biggest field ever. And he's obviously better than he's shown so far.
She is.
Sorry.
In this filly's race.
In the filly's and mare's race. Yeah. So are the girls running this one too? Yeah.
Yeah, she is. It's going to be a great day for Joseph Ryan because he's going to win those two races. Rory, anything in that before we move on to the Guineas, the Irish Guineas?
Without any odds, hard to know where you stand there. But I thought Pearls Galore won well in listed company last month. She looks as good as ever. And the pick of her form gives her every chance here. So I wouldn't want to be against her, but without any odds.
Would you expect her to be favourite?
I'd expect her to be a favourite, but not at a very short price. I think it's reasonably open.
Yeah.
But the pick of her form would guarantee that she should be reasonably short.
She was very well backed then, winning at Leopardstown on season debut. Right, the Irish 1,000 guineas Tuesday, the 7-4 favourite declared with Ryan Moore booked. Homeless Songs, we're finally going to get to see her after she was pulled out of France and kind of late-ish from Newmarket. She's 11-4. History for Aidan O'Brien on a hat-trick is 5-1. Purple Pay, the best of the Brits, it would appear, for Tom Marcand and William Haggis at 8-1. 9-1 Mise en Scene for James Ferguson, the other British raider. 10-1 Hermana Estrella for Fozzie Stack and Panama Red for Ger Lyons, and 12-1 Joseph Zagartha, who I assume Paddy's going to tip. But we'll go back to Rory first. The Irish 1,000 guineas Tuesday, now 7-4. She's been very solid.
Yeah, and she's short enough for me. I mean, I think she probably improves for the Newmarket run. But I didn't think she had any excuses on the day. She was drawn very well the way that race panned out. She was well positioned. And I thought, I thought she was, she was as good as the result, but no better. You'd rather, if you had to pick one of the top three to follow, it probably would have been the runner-up. I thought Zelly in fourth shaped well on the wrong side of the track with Sandrine. So I thought it was difficult to make excuses for Tuesday, although it's a very good run. And of course, Cachet ran extremely well in the French Guineas next time to show that the form is actually pretty solid. But it was a slightly funny race. They didn't finish off particularly strongly as a group. And maybe the fact that it was such a strong pace from the outset put a few of them on the back foot, and Tuesday might be in that group. But listen, she's got a decent chance on paper, but not an outstanding one, I don't think. And do you say she's 6-4?
7-4.
7-4. That strikes me as being too short for what she's achieved thus far. But she is typical of Aidan's in that you wouldn't be at all surprised to see a big jump from that run to this. But on what she did in the 1,000 at Newmarket, she doesn't have outstanding claims. She just has, she'd be the first horse you'd look at. But I think you'd want around 5-2 or thereabouts to really want to have a go on her. I could see Mise en Scene running well. Whether stall one is a good place to be, I don't know in a big field like this. But she was she was good in her first two starts last year. She was better than the result then in the Filly's Mile, and it didn't go her way when they took her out to the States. She is definitely the sort to train on well from 2-3. And James Ferguson has done very well this season. So, yeah, I'd fancy Mise en Scene to run a decent race. What price is she?
Currently, 9-1.
Yeah. And that's probably bottom range with her as well, quite frankly, given that, you know, it's a seasonal reappearance. The draw might be a little bit tricky. She's just one I had in my mind as a filly who would pick up a Group 1 race at some stage this season. So I'd keep her on side, but it wouldn't be a race I'd be approaching now with a huge amount of confidence as it stands.
That's fine. Paddy?
So one of the things that I value most when I'm trying to pick out horses I'm backing is trainer form. So I'm about to like go completely against that. one of my ground rules, right? Because I think Homeless Songs she was so taking when winning that Group 3 7 furlong Guinea Stride in April. You know, and the Wells stable really hasn't been, let's be honest, like they've had one winner from about a million, well, not that many runners, but they've had one winner, I think, or very bad.
One from 25.
There you go. 4%. Thank you. No 4% problem. Isn't great.
No.
But I think Homeless Songs is a bit special. And the fact that I totally agree with Rory about Tuesday, just hard to get excited about. The fact that that's first string suggests that she's better than history. Worried about Purple Pay because of the Haggis stable form, like you discussed earlier. Mise en scène maybe, but like you have stable or season reappearance is a worry. So I'm going through them all and I'm thinking Homeless Songs is, if only Dermot Well was in better form, I think Homeless Songs would be like a really, really strong fancy. But I really like her. I think she's very good. I think she'll win this.
Fair play. Okay, so Homeless Songs, and just keep an eye on the price of Mise en scène. If she gets double figures, I think Rory might, his interest might be peaked, but she's currently 9-1. A reminder that if you do like to play in the shops, you want to pop into a shop, we're going to be money back or losers on both guineas this weekend. So you can pop into a shop, doesn't matter who you are. You just walk in, you can have a free tenner on the 1,000 guineas on Sunday, a free tenner on the 2,000 guineas on Saturday. It's a free bet. You can do that in any Paddy Power shop around the UK. You decide. Right, there are a couple of handicaps before we go, lads. I want a very quick selection if you've got one in either the 420 and the 450, a 6-furlong sprint and a mile handicap. Paddy, give me one for both or either.
I'm going to go for Eddie Lynam's Rough Diamond in the sprint, the 6-furlong, the 420 race. Yeah, won well over 6-furlong at soft ground at Nace last time, but seems pretty versatile ground-wise. So even if it's not, that's out to be okay. I'd imagine like for most in this race, this is probably the target because it's a Premier handicap, obviously big prize money. So yeah. I think Rough Diamond, keep an eye on that one. And in the other race is the 450, right?
Yeah,
I've gone for Miss Mirabelle here. That's... Johnny Murtas. Yeah, Johnny Murtas. Yeah, perfect. And it's hard to know how good she is because she won her maiden really nicely from the front and didn't mind at all when all the challengers came to her. She just fought them off one by one. So, well, there wasn't that many challengers. But anyway, she won from the front and they did come to her a couple of furlongs out and she just found plenty more and won really well in the end. So I've no idea how to rate that, if the handicapper's got it right or wrong. But I think that she's very good anyway and probably improving.
Legend. Rory, is there anything in those handicaps or will we say goodbye? We've been on a long time.
I'm not massive on the Sunday at this stage because I've had limited time to
look
at it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
But Big Gossie caught the eye. Again, not sure whether the stall one is going to be the ideal place to be, but it looks a better place to be in this race over six than I'd be sure about it being in the 1,000 guineas. Big Gossie, course and distance winner. He's been a bit disappointing early this season, finishing well beaten in a couple of handicaps over 5 and 6 furlongs here, but took a big step forward when third behind Blair Mayne at Nace last time out. Just seems to be running into form because he'd run a few moderate races. He's dropped in the weights again. And if you take Danny Sheehy's claim into account, he's essentially off the same mark as when winning here in September. And that's the kind of pattern I like to see. It gives the impression of a trainer working backwards from a target.
Lovely. That's Big Gossie in the 420. Gentlemen, I have kept you far too long, much longer than you'd expected on your Friday afternoon. Thank you so much for covering an enormous amount of racing. I hope you found a few winners. Thanks very much for sticking with us to the end of the pod. You're very much a loyal fan if you've managed to do that. That's a bumper look ahead to the weekend. We'll be back next week to look ahead to next weekend's racing. Until then, Rory, have a fabulous weekend. Paddy, have a fabulous weekend.
Thank you very much.
Show on my nap now.
Paddy Power, what only remains for us to do is to get your nap selection over the weekend. You can pick, obviously, anything from Saturday as well, if you want, or whichever you fancy.
I am going to Saturday, but I'm sticking with the Curra. A case of you.
A case of you.
2:45 Curra on Saturday.
You both made very strong cases for a case of you. And the one thing, remember I said, Matt Chapman, it's lovely outside. It's glorious. It's blue weather, blue skies. It's absolutely pissing down now. So as soon as he left, it started pissing down. He was right, to be fair to him. He's right about a few things, our Matt Chapman. Lads, have a great weekend and we'll be back next week.
Cheers, Big A.
Thanks very much.